You know who seemed to not have to prove it as much, even though when you think about it, they probably should have to improve to prove it more? The tall white guy.
Psycho Bar and the Barking Chicken.
The Barking Chicken. Yo, I will tell you this much. I'm excited to talk tonight, so... Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another episode of Zebra Stripes Podcast. I'm Coach Gene Clemens, joined as always by Coach Whit LaJure. The sound that you hear is of me cracking a frosty beverage, and we've got a hot 45 for you tonight. Not just because I've said it, but because Whit has said it, and we're coming in hot. How are you doing, Whit?
I'm doing great. Thank you. Looking for a high-intensity 45 minutes. Going to set a record for one of our shortest ever.
I'm doing great. Thank you. It's probably not going to get us there. I'm talking about how are you doing? Like, I know it's been a lot of stuff. Let's just recap because it's been a lot of craziness up there. Not where you are, but around near where you are. I personally have fond memories of Lewiston, Maine. It is a place that I used to frequent much when I lived there. Never had a bad time there. I did have a young lady that broke my heart there, but I was shocked when I heard the news of something. I can't remember ever not feeling safe in Maine. And that was the craziest thing for me. So when I say, how are you? You know, obviously, how are you? How's the community? How's everybody doing?
Yeah, well, you tricked me a little bit with that, but that's okay. Listen, obviously, everyone's heart goes out to just the horrific tragedy. I've got some friends over there at a community college local to Lewiston and Lewiston Auburn. And you know, I'm not a Mainer from way back. I'm just 27 years in. You know, if you're a real Mainer, you go back, you know, multiple generations. But the bottom line, people will say, you know, the state of Maine is like a small town. You know, it's very connected, and I think that's the way, you know, this country kind of feels in times of great sorrow or that sort of thing, but Maine for sure. I told my wife I was hoping it was some sort of tipping point. I just happened to see Mike Brown in a presser with the Sacramento Kings, the coach, the former Cavs coach, now with the Kings, and he said, on my way to work I saw Lewiston, Maine, and you could just hear the incredulousness in his voice. And I told MB, I said, that's, you know, I'm hoping there's not people that go like, you know, obviously there is so much and way too much violence in this world and in this country and every day. So not going to grandstand that. But, you know, like when this is going on in Maine, then, you know, I'm hopeful that there are some people that might confront the reality that we've got a problem. That's what I hope. But mostly, obviously, condolences and heartfelt, you know, just sorrow for the families that experienced it, the victims and family and friends. And then the fact is, Maine stopped. So we didn't have a school. My wife didn't have a school. We're 20 miles or so away. I mean, well, there was a manhunt going on. It felt, some people I heard say it, and it eerily a little bit like COVID, like a little like something was different for, you know, a couple of days. That's what I'll say. And you know, so our school today, we were back, I mean, for the first time, and we met as a school. And so, you know, I guess, right, never forget, but move on too, and maybe move forward with some. I listened to Jared Golden, one of the state senator reps, and congressman, and he apologized. I hope that gets some airplay. He apologized for his what have been his policies with regarding gun control. And boy, I'm not going to get political on the show here, but let's hope there's some real progress. So,
yeah, I think it's just so unfortunate, and I don't want to continue to bang on it. So I will just give people one of my favorite Lewiston, Maine stories from my time living in Maine. Obviously, when you are a young male teacher at Bridgeton Academy, you are in the import-export business. Shout out to Matt Burgess, who once gave me that analogy. You are in the import-export business, Bridgeton Academy being an all-boys school, you being a single male, Bridgeton not necessarily being the young single capital of the world, you've got to go. And it's not a hassle to drive an hour into Portland, Maine, but it is inconvenient. It's inconvenient when you have to work in the morning. And so Lewiston not being an hour away and being a little bit more being a little bit easier to navigate getting there and back, having the opportunity to go over there and have a, you know, have a few and see some people. It's a, you know, a college town, and you know, some you know, people are like-minded in there. I would go there, and I would go to a karaoke night on Tuesday. And usually I was pretty good about going to karaoke night on Tuesday and knowing when to get out, like knowing when to leave, because you've got, like, you know, 5 a.m. workouts. And so I was there and sang a couple songs, and then and I was about to leave. And then I saw her wit. I saw her, and then I saw 3 a.m. And so now at 3 a.m., I have to get back to Bridgeton Academy in time. But there are forces that are holding me in Lewiston. And so everything that I have mustered, getting back, I'm trying to get back. I had said young lady drive me back to Bridgeton and stay until my school day was over, and then drove me back to Lewiston to get my car in order to drive back to Bridgeton. There's a lot of gaps in there that I probably should not fill in at this point if I ever want to, you know, see some things, or if we ever have like a, you know, an hour and a half pod, I'll let you in on them. But just a great time, great people, great environment. I've always liked it. If I was going to live in Maine for a long period of time, I really and truly thought about moving to Lewiston. I interviewed for a few jobs at Bates over the years. It was one of the places that I thought about trying to come back to. And, you know, like I said, heart goes out to them. And I know that, you know, healing has started, and hopefully everybody can get back to some semblance of normal sooner rather than later. Speaking of normal, I said I was cracking open a frosty one, but I wasn't drinking a margarita. And if you follow us on this podcast, you know that I like to at time have a nice margarita and sit back. And it got me to thinking about something. Like, as we go from, you know, what is fall to the beginning signs of winter, when is the actual cutoff for margarita season? Or in your mind, do you think there's a cutoff for margarita season?
I would say this. I think the quantity of margaritas decrease as you get into the throes of winter, but I don't think the margarita goes away entirely. And I think, like red and white wine, where the rules have changed, I think the rules for what you might drink year-round have changed too. And the margarita, like Cinco de Mayo in general, right, is a sign of warmth and joy and happiness and good times. And so who wouldn't want that on any particular free night that they might have? So I think the right margarita on the right night in the middle of a snowstorm, no problem. That's my thought on it. Probably not gonna be the go-to in the way that it might be in the summer months for some, but not ruling it out completely. So the whole key, and I'm not a pro at it either, by the way, but you know, it's having a good one. There's nothing like a good one, and there are a lot of them out there.
Facts.
And you know what? Save me the bad one. Really don't want it. I'd rather have a beer.
A bad margarita can actually like sour you on margaritas for a while.
Yeah.
Like a bad margarita can make you not want to have a margarita when you might normally go to a margarita. I guess, you know, looking at it the way you're looking at it is it can almost be like a mood changer. You know, like it, you haven't seen the sun for 10, 11 days. You know what? I'm going to have a margarita and conjure up those feelings.
Yeah, people have beach parties, right, in the winter. Or they, you know, so mm-hmm. It is, you're 100% right. Last time I checked, when people choose to make the mature decision to consume alcohol, last time I checked, it's for a mood change. So, you know.
Very true.
Yeah, so anyway, but, liquor, you know, liquor is a lot like, you know, I mean, women. I mean, women are great and men are great. All people are great. Right. I mean, everything. God is great, but like there's a lot of liquor that's good. So,
yeah,
you know,
yeah,
you don't want to discriminate there.
You don't want to eliminate one just because for no real legitimate reason. OK, yeah, I think something else that I don't want to that I thought about that I wanted to talk to you about is I think I have a bias. Right. And I'm going to put it on me because I don't want to do the thing that some people do when they really want to talk about their own feelings and try to say, oh, well, people, this people thing. But I think I have an issue with the way in which foreign-born players are looked at when they come to the NBA. As if they're doing something magical that has never been done before. And in my experience over my years, I've seen far more failed foreign-born players than I have successful ones, right? So when you hit me with a Wembanyama, I see all the talent. I see all of the potential, right? But in my mind, I think I'm hating on him because he's not American. I think I'm hating on him a little bit because he does, like, if he was coming out of Virginia Tech or out of XYZ program, if he was a high schooler from Texas and he was doing all of this, I think I would have a higher level of excitement for him than I do based off of the fact that he is from France. And I don't think I'm alone in this. I don't think I'm alone in this. And again, I feel like I can recognize like talent and potential, but also be honest and say, I'm a little more skeptical because ... or I'm a little less excited because ... What do you think?
Well, I think you're being very honest. I think there's a an extremely serious side to your point. I think there's a middle of the road, and then I think there's a, you know, kind of a humorous side. So first, I'm just going to start with the serious and say, like, when you start saying, hey, I might have a hidden bias against international players in the NBA, yeah, hidden bias is a real thing. And I'm sitting here as a white, older male talking to a middle-aged African-American male, and hidden bias is real stuff, right, shown in studies. So that cuts a lot of different directions. It would be interesting to think about, you know, is there a hidden bias, you know, to international players? Of course there is. Like, of course there is. And you got me thinking, you know, who's the greatest international player of all time? I mean, who's
– Dirk Nowitzki.
Yeah, that's what I thought. That's what I came up with. And I, you know, I mean, Tony Parker, pretty goddamn good. Our guy for the Trailblazers back in the day, Pekovic, right?
Or Sojourner's, no, Arvydas Sabonis.
Well, he was pretty damn good.
Drazen Petrovic. Drazen Petrovic?
Yeah, Drazen. Yeah,
from the Nets. He was playing for the Nets, too.
Awfully darn good. But, you know, I think you've got to – I think the standard's higher when you're international, you know, just like the standard's higher when you're a woman, or the standard might be higher if you're a person of color. I think the standard's higher. And you think of, like, you know, the mass culture's acceptance of black athletes just in this country. And you say, okay, Magic smile in part – disarmed people, right? It just made them comfortable. Okay, you know, and all that sort of stuff. So, you know, Wemby, is he getting? And I was kind of, when I saw your pre-game, pre-show notes, like, is Wemby getting dumped on a little bit already? I haven't seen it.
No, and that's I guess that was my thing, right? Is that I feel like there's this, the group of people that go, oh my gosh, we've never seen anything like Wemby. We've said it. We've never seen anything like this dude, right? But then there's also the people that be like, oh, well, just wait until he's got to deal with the physicality, or, oh yeah, but, you know, they had, who was it? They had a small forward guarding him at one point. He couldn't back out a small forward, you know. And he's playing the center, and people were like, "Oh yeah, but he could get injured." And I feel like there's people were looking for all of the negatives instead of just embracing the fact that we've never seen 7'2" and athletic and dwarfing people and making them look like kids out there, as far as just how tall and menacing he is as a defender. Like we see people practicing with mops and brooms to like imitate like shooting over him because his wingspan is so long. Like you see all of these cool things, and you're just like, yo, if this works out, if this becomes what it could be at the height of it, This could be the greatest thing ever. Juxtapose right, just people just going, oh well, that's not going to work because he's too big and he's too tall and he's too slight a build and he's going to get hurt and all this other stuff.
Well, what you're right about is the fact that tall people, giants in sport, have always had to prove it. They've always people don't like to root for the giants necessarily. Until they win for their team, you know, like they're just easy. It's easier to root for the little guy. We get enamored with the skills of a little guy that can weave through, you know, even NFL, I would say it's kind of the same thing. You know, the Giants almost got to prove their humanity because they look so different than the rest of us. And then, you know, it's just a quit now when the Giant plays for your team. So when Kevin Garnett comes to the Celtics and wins, Now this menacing, ferocious, over-the-top personality guy and, you know, extraordinary player is beloved. But when Kevin Garnett's starting out and da-yada-da-da-da, he's just going to, you know, the naysayers are going to be the naysayers, in part because of physical size. So Wemby, I think, would face that absolutely.
You know who seemed to not have to prove it as much, even though when you think about it, they probably should have to improve to prove it more? The tall white guy. The tall American white guy. They get stamped. 100%. They get stamped super quick. And then we watch them go to the league and just be like dudes. Right? Like if you eliminate foreign-born white guys, who's the best one rolling around the NBA right now?
I'm gonna go back a little bit. The only guy that faced some of the discrimination that you're talking about, right? So maybe the standard's just higher. The guy that faced exactly what you're talking about was Sean Bradley, and he was 7'6". So if you're a white guy, like, you have to be like 7'6" to 8'2". But if you're black, the numbers are down. You know, just being over 6'9" or 6'10" qualifies you for that type of ill feeling.
Well, I asked that because there's two bigs that are well, I shouldn't even say bigs. There are two tall, athletic white guys who are kind of taking center stage here in the next week because of a decision that they've made, right? Hunter Dickinson transferred from Michigan.
Yep.
And went to KU. Yep. Very interesting move, in my opinion. The wrong move, in my opinion. But a very interesting move, a guy who a lot of people think can be a lottery pick or think will be a lottery pick. But I've looked in the NBA and I don't see where his impact's going to be at. And then the burgeoning next coming of Larry Bird-esque 2.0 Cooper Flagg, who has now He added a year or he advanced a year. So he's graduating 2024. He is committed to Duke. He's been killing it. He killed it all summer where he really exploded onto the scene during travel ball. He committed to Duke over Connecticut, which I thought was a 100% terrible decision by him if he's talking about basketball. If we're talking about anything other than basketball, cool. Great decision. If we're talking about basketball, that was 100% the wrong decision to make. What's your thoughts on both of those guys?
Well, it's a heck of a segue. So I think Dickinson made the move. It's an astounding move. I think it's a good one. I think KU is a bigger brand, bigger stage, better chance to – you know, more statistically speaking, chance to play for a Final Four and potentially national championship. Hey, look, if this was straight, and this is, I just read more about it in the last week. This was straight money. This was straight NIL. This was straight the long arm of Kansas, and the money people behind Kansas hoop is bigger than the long arms of Michigan and Michigan money. And so that was straight cash on the table deal. Because he could stay at either place and probably it's not going to change his draft status or this and that. So I'll take up that part of where I think he might fit. I mean, he is be regarded as the consensus number one pick next year. And I think like you, I have some doubts about how his game might translate. Cooper Flagg. Now I'm going to say, hey, guess what? From the great state of Maine on a positive note here, far more positive. We can say, you know, as a Maine guy, when I saw it, I, I loved it because I said, God dang, a Maine guy, you know, going to Duke. You know, there have been Maine kids go to the Big East and, you know, some of that stuff before, right? But as far as I know, at least I know in the modern era, I haven't been one at Duke. So he is going to what has become, you know, the UCLA of the modern era. He's going to the standard bearing program, which again, we argued at the end of last year. Like, I get it, but the brand of Duke. And you know what? I suspect he's going for things beyond basketball, which credit to him. He's probably a one and doneer either way, maybe not, but I would expect he very well could be. So I look at that one as, more doors, not for the kids in Maine to simply get to Duke, because that's going to be a rarity. It's just a continued exposure of Maine basketball and Maine players, which again, 100 years ago, a long time ago, when I was first here, like that, and before, Maine kids had a hard time getting recruited. When they did leave the state, there was a tendency for them to come back. It was just different. And that's changed, and there have been programs now, both Division III, II, and I, that have opened their arms to Maine kids, and Maine kids have gone and really succeeded. Okay, so and that's made that people have taken notice. Colleges at every level. I've even spoken to admissions people who love some of the qualities that many Maine men bring. So that would be my take on Cooper Flagg is. Regardless of your thoughts about basketball piece of that decision, he's made a decision. Hopefully, that's good for him, obviously, but one that's good for Maine and Maine basketball.
Yeah, I mean, you know what would have been, and it's so hard because it gets into the point of criticizing the decisions of a 16-year-old, right? And I don't really want to do that, but this is something that's irked me, and it's not just Cooper Flagg. You see it all the time in football as well, where guys leave a you're already a name, you're already a brand, you've already solidified who you are, right? And now you transfer to another school, nowhere near where you came up and got that name and got that notoriety, and now that's attached to your name and not the place where, you know, the place that raised you. The place.
Well,
that
are we talking about Hunter? Are you talking about Dickinson in this case?
No, I'm talking about Cooper Flagg in this case.
Oh, so oh, you what, know, like Connecticut, he owes something to New England.
No, not Connecticut. He is spending his last year not in Maine.
Right. Yeah. Absolutely. A lot of kids that are left their high schools all over the place and are playing other places all over the country.
I know. But my point is that when
you want him to come back and go to UMaine?
No, I want him to I just would want him to be like represent Maine. Like, you know, not go to UMaine necessarily, but like as a high schooler, continue to bring more. And again, it's tough because we're asking a 16-year-old to be like the torchbearer, but you know, somebody's got to do it. Like it is going down to Florida and playing basketball in high school. Is that going to make you, you know, better, or is just getting in the gym and working on your game going to make you better, right? And so, like, your name opens up the doors. Nobody was calling for St. Vincent, St. Mary to go to anywhere and play basketball until LeBron James was there. And once LeBron James was there, all of a sudden that place. So it's like you can bring them to you, or you can take your whatever. And again, I know it's difficult. I know what I'm saying. I just wish I would see more of that. We have a kid here in the area that plays football. Who was a Savannah kid and had offers as a freshman and then went to IMG. Like, was the top five. He's a top five recruit in his class already. Then went to IMG, and now IMG is plastered all over him everywhere instead of Savannah. You know what I'm saying?
Yep.
And it's like,
yes, I do.
That's
I
the
do.
Opportunity to not only just do you, but also, you know, kind of give a little buoy to your community as well. I don't know.
I see both sides of that. I mean, here's the bottom line. Sports has been professionalized. Sports has been professionalized and commercialized to a younger and younger and really pervertedly young ages. I mean, if we're being honest about it, we're not going to have that conversation on youth sport again for tonight. Mm-hmm. But I mean, and that's to a fault. I mean, so it has been professionalized, and I think, you know, on the other side of it, there is a place for getting into more competitive arenas that where it might fit a bigger picture better. I wonder a little bit in your example, I wonder even today, does LeBron, and he might, but does he stay at St. Vincent, or is he on his way somewhere else in today's world? I think probably every case is very different, and I'm not going to sit here because I do not know everything that went into Cooper Flagg's decision to go to Montverde. But I think, you know, I hear what you're saying, and you know, it's just kind of where we're at.
Yeah, I don't want it to be a criticism. I just it's just something that I would like to see. Like like, I'm not criticizing. I get it. It's the game. It's just something I would like to see. Another thing I would like to see, as we are, because I think we're gonna revisit this Hunter Dickinson, conversation later, because I feel like he chased the short money, but you know, with college basketball coming out, you know my feelings on North Carolina, and I'm just wondering is the coach on the hot seat this year? Like, is it national championship, bad season, and now you better turn around or we're going in another direction?
Well, I loved the pregame notes on it. It wouldn't be since I had, you know, said to you a little bit of a college kickoff coming up here in the next week to 10 days, it wouldn't be college season if you weren't hating on Hubert. So my thought is his seat is absolutely very warm. There's no question about it. Like, his seat has warmed. Like, I got my car. I've got a low, I think a medium and a high setting on my leather seat. And, you know, I don't think his is necessarily on high, but it's on low, and they're thinking about like whether or not they should just kick it up to high heat. And so I don't think North Carolina needs to win a national championship. I think they need to make the NCAA tournament. I think they would probably prefer a Sweet 16. He needs to show something. And I think that if they fell too far below whatever expectations are sitting in Chapel Hill right now at this moment, that would probably compel some powerful people to discuss whether or not they needed to make a change.
I can tell you without any hesitation, if they don't make the NCAA tournament, Hubert Davis is getting fired. Like, I don't know. It was a complete and utter disaster last year. Like, a train wreck. I have never seen like it so bad that one of their best players just decided, I'm going somewhere else. I think he went and committed committed somewhere else, and then a few days later decommitted from there and is heading. So I don't even know where he is right now. But when one of your best players, a guy that helped you get to a national championship, goes, yo, I don't know what's going on over here, but I got to get out of here. That is a bad sign for you as a coach. That is a bad sign. And so I think that using your analogy, those leather seats are burning his butt right now. Those leather seats are on high, and they're trying to figure out how to put the heat a little bit higher. Like if they don't make the NCAA tournament, he is getting fired. He might get fired if they have an ugly showing in the NCAA tournament. It's that serious for him, in my opinion.
Yeah, it may be. The good news is they're not likely to have the same type of season. Things happen sometimes, and just like his turnabout reminds me a little bit of Tony Bennett's experience at Virginia, where they were the first ever to lose to a 16, and then experienced in the very next year, the championship, or Purdue this past year, just an outrageous loss to Fairleigh Dickinson. So I think,
I got to stop you right there. You're comparing what North Carolina did yet last year, their season last year, to two teams who are the number one seed going into the NCAA tournament and just lost a game?
I'm comparing it in the sense of plausibility and implausibility. Like that bad things happen. And sometimes those bad things happen in games that you would just never, ever expect. And sometimes those things accumulate over a season to produce a misery that no one could foreshadow. And that can happen sometimes. And just as absurdly, that can turn around. And, the situation, it's not – I mean, Hubert's ultimately responsible. He knows that. But, I mean, he's got – there's a team full of players, and there's a set of coaches that all have something to do with turning that thing around. I'm just saying, I don't think I would be very surprised. I would be very surprised. You heard it here. If North Carolina had too bad a season, I just don't see that coming.
Yeah, I hope that Alabama doesn't. I'm sorry. I hope that North Carolina doesn't have a bad season, because ultimately, my fandom wants to win. Basketball games, but if it's looking anything like it looked last year, it's going to be bad. Are you still in Nate Oates We Trust? Are you still riding the Nate Oates bandwagon?
Yeah, no, I am. I mean, I think I am, and he's hired a.
Ooh, it doesn't sound as
assistant coach.
It doesn't sound as goofy as it used to sound.
I mean, it's. I think he's taken a significant step forward with the success in the last 2 years. He's hired an assistant who's a lot of professional experience. So, honestly, from a basketball standpoint, I'm intrigued to watch the way they play offense this year, because he's hired. I'm saying this, nothing I've seen from Nate Oates or their staff, but I think he's basically hired – I'm not an offensive coordinator. He's hired a coach with a tremendous amount of offensive experience at the pro level, so I'm kind of curious what they're going to roll out. The SEC is a tough league, so I expect big things from Nate Oates. I trust Nate Oates.
Nate Oates is still – so who's your sleeper this year? Who's your team that you think might come out of nowhere and give UConn a run? Because I fully expect UConn to be right back near where they were on last year. I don't know if they can win it again, but I wouldn't be surprised.
And I'm going to say this. Like, I think UConn's going to be good, but – they lost some pieces, okay? And their chemistry, back to what I was saying a little bit earlier, their chemistry was so good. And I talked to Tommy Moore, one of the associate head coach, saw him this summer, talked to him at length. He was kind enough to spend some time after a showcase we had. And I said, look, their chemistry was so on point that it was ridiculous. And I'm sure we talked about it last year because it blew me away. That chemistry has changed. And so they've obviously got a lot of talent back and they've got some new guys. But, you know, it'll be interesting to see how returning players live up to what now are heightened expectations. So, you know, I'll take Dusty May and Florida Atlantic, if we can call them a sleeper. I'm gonna take them as a nice, like, they're not gonna get like long odds. They're good, but I'm gonna take them as someone that people probably are still gonna sleep on a little bit because they're not in one of the Power Five conferences. So I'm gonna ride Dusty May. I'll tell you what, I'll ride Dusty May's outfit harder than Nate Oates this year. In Dusty May, I trust.
Dusty May is your guy this year.
Yeah, and I've got a few others. I probably, you know, I can wait a week or so till
they tip off, everything really tips off next week. I'm obviously excited because I get to, you know, I like to throw a couple quarters on college basketball, so really looking,
what do you
forward.
Think? How about, you know, I think Purdue's going to be a compelling story to watch, just to see, you know, the return of Zach Edey after all that, the what they've had to go through and withstand. I'm sure they probably, you know, more sports psychologists to come through there and try to make sure they had, you know, done some deep drilling to get everything right. So that'll be fascinating to watch Purdue rise from the ashes. Hey, I'll give you this one. Saw it this morning, and I'll tell you, man, Pace University, Northeast 10, Division 2, over the Johnnies of Rick Pitino the other night in a scrimmage, 64-59. Uh-huh. Division 2 New York school beats a team that – is picked to finish, I think, fifth in the Big East. And again, jumps out at me because I tell my guys all the time, you know, all the glitters ain't gold, and you got to be careful when you look at these different levels. And, you know, mm-hmm. You look at games, that's how good Pace is, and that's how, like, not so good St. John's is or whatever, like some of these levels. There's teams in the Midwest, I'm told by good friends, Division III teams, that will go in and beat plenty of Division I teams on a regular basis on some of these dark scrimmages and whatnot before the year starts. They're just a bunch of old, good players.
I you don't think that there's a part of that, though, that comes from the fact that the Division I team is just working on stuff? Like, that the fact that they get beat by St. John's, gets beat by Pace, isn't because Pace is just a better team than St. John, is because St. John's is working on some stuff, doing some things, maybe rolling some different combos out, maybe even like working on different offenses, defenses, stuff that they have not perfected, that they're just trying to like roll out.
No. Because the lesson in sport is, on that day, Pace was better, period. And the truth is, St. John's has had their guys on campus all summer. Pace is not. All fall, more practice days in the fall than anything Pace has done. So that they've had plenty of time to develop their team and their systems. So if you want to say, hey, look, this is simply a case where the big time school sleepwalked, is that the word? They were sleepwalking through a game.
Yeah.
Sure, of course they were, and they don't, and it matters a lot less to them than it does to pay. Sure, but that's a mind trick, and I would use a different word. I'm going to use trick, okay? But the other word I'd use ends with a K also. It's a mind trick that somehow, some way, some games are more important than others. That's what you have to be careful about that, as you well know in sport.
Yeah, absolutely. I just look at it and go, like, if somebody rolls the ball out, you know what? You're right. You're right. I'm not going to take anything away from Pace. While we're at it, shout out to Augustana, who beat Georgia Southern in a similar dark private game that got out publicly and people found out about, because you can't keep these dark games private anymore because people have phones, right? You can't keep them. So nobody reports when the D2 school gets beat by 100, right? Nobody reports that. But the mo I've seen times where a team will struggle with a lower level team one day, then they play the next day and they blow them out by 100. Nobody ever says anything about that. But you're right. On that day, at that time, you know what would be interesting to do? Have like a postseason battle of the levels, right? Because basketball is actually a game where you could do that. You could put the Division II champion versus the Division I champion versus the Division III NAIA champion. And it's not like somebody's gonna get hurt, right? It's not like football where you're really putting people's bodies in jeopardy by putting these lower level teams up against these higher level teams. Like in basketball, like that would be an intriguing little something. I think we should find a sponsor that will pay all these kids to play in a postseason thing. I think that would be interesting.
I think it's a good idea, and I think it's a little bit like the old Indiana high school tournament, where it was an open tournament to all classes, and you know there were plenty of states, and New England used to have a champion, the same thing. So I think that's a good idea, and given the nature, given how many funny games, funny strange games we sponsor these days on battleships and baseball stadiums
Stupid.
and
All stupid.
everywhere, football fields, right?
Yep.
That having a, yeah, I think following up on your idea would make a lot of sense. We got to push for it.
All right. Quick things that we're getting out of here, because we told these people we were going to get them a hot 45. How do you feel about the Celtics a couple games in?
I feel as good as I felt when I told you that I thought they made themselves better. And everything that I've seen so far supports that
No concern
feeling.
that they struggled to put away the Knicks.
No. The Knicks play them tough in New York, game one. I would say small letter concern that and Jaylen Brown bounced back big time with the win, in the win over the Heat. But they still will have to figure out Jaylen and Jason, and those two guys. I still have small level of concern that they try to complement each other, make each other better, do this and do that. But the rest of it, really good, no doubt about it. That would be my take there. Did
I
you?
would
Yeah.
tell you, that I feel like the Lakers are going to be one of those teams that will have to get hot in order to have any chance of postseason success. I don't think that the
I
way they're currently constituted, they have
yeah.
enough to be able to beat anybody 4 games out of 7.
I totally agree with you. I actually find myself feeling bad for LeBron. I mean, because they put in the minutes restriction in game two, he immediately, exceeds it because he wants to win. They get a win. Like I feel bad, like that. Yeah, they're not going anywhere fast.
Yeah, and I just think that a lot of the moves that people applauded, it only works if they play to their highest level all the time. And those players, all of them are streaky. All of them are streaky, including some of the players that they brought back from last year. They're streaky. Hell, AD is streaky. The only constant, the only every single night dude is the damn near 40-year-old out there. It's oh my gosh, it's annoying. We've seen the Bucks. They look damn good.
They look good. I mean, but and then looked bad, right? Didn't they then they had a they got blown out
Yeah.
in game. So they've a little bit of mixed return. I mean, which is fine. I mean, I think they're good. So you're not going to get me hating on the Bucks. The Bucks are really good. Damian showed what he's got in putting up 40 or something in game one. I'm not sure what I didn't see the game that they lost, and he didn't play very well and didn't shoot it. But the Bucks are going to be just fine. That's pretty easy to see the Bucks and Celtics. Obviously, that's going to be the worst kept secret in the all season long, one in the 1 and 2 seat.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see what the other teams in the East do, but I would lean with you. Celtics Bucks look like they're on a collision course. Nuggets look like they're, I mean, Jokic looks like he's playing with people out there. He
And the
looks
Suns
like
look pretty good.
yeah, but they don't have an answer for they don't have a Jokic answer. I don't think that Nurkic is a guy who's gonna be able to neutralize him or at least make him work heavy on the other end. I just don't know. The only thing you got to hope for if you want to beat the Nuggets is injury. That's the only thing that's really held them down over the years is the fact that Jamal Murray hasn't stayed healthy. But if Jamal Murray is out there and Jokic is out there, that's a hard night for anybody. It'll be
I
interesting to
agree.
watch. NBA's back. Matt Jones looks like he has a pulse again. So the Patriots are on the uptick. The Bucks are bad.
What? The Patriots are on the uptick?
Yeah, Matt Jones beat the Bills.
Yo, did you just see they lost in Miami yesterday?
I was trying to throw you a lifeline over there with.
Oh, no,
Like,
no.
why are you
I mean,
trying
we're
to
down. No,
why are you
no.
trying
We're
to bring
back in.
up?
Hey, they got to sell. The Patriots got to sell. That's the big conversation in New England today is before the trading deadline. They got to get draft assets.
Yeah, they got to get draft assets so they could just not draft good players. It's crazy.
Well, no, they probably they're it also calls for a new coach is what they're calling for in New England.
Oh,
So.
well, that's not happening. We heard about the new contract. Well, I mean, that doesn't necessarily matter because Robert Kraft is, he can write that check in his sleep. But I did, however, appreciate Matt Jones looking like he had a pulse versus the Bills. That was nice to see because he could have
And
just laid down altogether.
he did a nice, even that was a great win. And I thought that game was going well until he threw the worst interception to
Yeah, it was
Jalen
awful.
Ramsey. It was
It was
awful.
awful.
And so you're not, that's going to be his epitaph. Like, you can't survive that interception. Seriously. Like,
Yeah.
he's going to be a backup quarterback on a different team next year. Maybe he's on. He will not be the starting quarterback of the New England Patriots next year.
Well, there you go. You heard it from Witt first. Not from me. You heard it from Witt, Zebra Stripes Podcast, episode 4. Ladies and gentlemen, as always, make sure that you like, make sure you subscribe to the pod, make sure you're following us. We really do appreciate it. At Whit LeJour, at Gene Clemens, around social media. Next week, we're back in high, like college basketball mode. High school basketball, prep basketball is gearing up. It's the most wonderful time of the year. and we look forward to talking about it all here with you as always. So until next time, you all be blessed.